Earlier this week, we spoke with professor and diversity educator Omekongo Dibinga. His book, Lies About Black People, seeks to identify and debunk long-held beliefs about the inferiority of black people. You can check out the conversation at hereandnow.org. Journalist Sonali Kolhatkar says the media and Hollywood are partly responsible for perpetuating these lies and stereotypes about people of colour. And as she writes in her new book, the problem of racist narratives can be countered with stories of racial justice. Her book is Rising Up, and Sonali Kolhatkar joins me now. Sonali, welcome.
It's lovely to be with you, Deepa.
So, Sonali, the centerpiece of your book is taking on racist narratives that we constantly hear. I'd love you to start by giving us a quick list of some of these narratives. Make it real in our mind what you're talking about.
The most familiar examples to people are the kinds of things that Tucker Carlson, up until relatively recently, had been spewing on Fox News. You can, you know, think about Rush Limbaugh. And so there's the very kind of overt racist narrative. And then you've got our corporate media as well, that doesn't push back enough against racism and unfortunately upholds the status quo. I consider that part of narratives that uphold racist stereotypes.
Mm. You know, and I want to just get you to go further on that, because the outlets that you're talking about, the New York Times and this very one we're talking on now, National Public Radio, well, you call them out for various things. And one of those is the delay in calling out President Trump for his racist remarks. Talk about that.
Absolutely. You know, when Donald Trump decided to run for president, he came out guns blazing and all but said that he was a racist. In his speech where he announced his candidacy, he talked about Mexicans being rapists. And the Washington Post, you know, did a fact check of that. I mean, it's kind of ludicrous to think about the fact that they had to check his claim instead of simply calling him a racist. And then it wasn't until 2 years into his presidential tenure when he essentially told the young congresswomen of color, such as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, to go back to where they came from, this age-old racist trope. It wasn't until then that NPR, that Washington Post, that many other mainstream corporate media outlets, you know, decided that it was okay to call him a racist. And it shouldn't have taken them that long, because in not calling a racist, especially one that occupied the highest position in the country, they basically enabled him.
And one of the things that you point out is that there's a lack of representation in newsrooms, in editorial staffs, that this is still an issue. Why does that matter?
People write what they know. People talk about what they know. I mean, that's very human of us, right? So, for example, white writers in Hollywood write what they know. They write about their experiences. The rest of us have to assume that those experiences reflect ours, but they don't. And the same is true in news media. So a white journalist will tend to cover racist police brutality in a very different way than a journalist of color might. The greater the representation, the percentage of people of color in our newsrooms, the more representative the coverage will be naturally. If we can get black and brown people covering the lives and the issues important to black and brown people, we're going to get much fairer coverage. And that's a no-brainer.
And you say, and I'm quoting you here, we're constantly cognizant of the idea that a white supremacist society sees each one of us as a representative of our entire race. Can you explain that?
Absolutely, right? Anytime, you know, people like you and I, for example, you know, have any kind of claim that we might make, we are seen as being representative of all South Asians or South Asian women. It's the politics of respectability, quote unquote. So, for example, Black Lives Matter, you know, this incredible movement and its leaders are expected to be perfect human beings, and any flaw is taken as an excuse to reject their entire ideology. And we usually don't hold white people to those standards. But people of color, we have to be perfect in order to be taken seriously. We all deserve to be full, complex human beings who might make mistakes and who might do great things. And, you know, we fall everywhere in between on the spectrum. And that complexity of our humanity is critical.
And I think that's the flip side of the racist narrative, is that there are racial justice ways of telling stories, and that's what you also talk about in the book. Tell me about those as we close up. What are other ways to tell these narratives?
In my book, I have an interview with Ryan Coogler, best known for Black Panther. He's a household name now. But before he did that, he did this amazing film, Fruitvale Station, about the very last day in the life of Oscar Grant, the young Black man who was killed by BART police in Oakland. That film is just so beautiful. It doesn't actually show him being killed. It only shows his last day on Earth. It is a complex, nuanced, gorgeous portrait. That's the kind of storytelling we need. And only Ryan Coogler, an Oakland native, a Black man, could have made this film in the way that he did.
Sonali Kolhatkar's book is Rising Up, The Power of Narrative in Pursuing Racial Justice. Sonali, thank you so much.
Thank you, Deepa.